Hello and welcome to Practically Speaking. My name is Lane Jones and I want to thank you for joining us for this informal discussion with the management team of North Point Ministries. Today's segment concludes a series that we've done on the seven practices of effective ministry. These seven practices form the basic operating system for how we do ministry here at North Point. Today we look at the practice we call Work On It. I'm joined by Andy Stanley and the Director of Family Ministry for North Point, Reggie Joyner. Andy, obviously all of the seven practices are a critical part of how we do what we do here at North Point. But in some ways, the practice of working on it, the process of evaluation, has been one of the most important.
Yeah, actually, we got this phrase from one of the first books we read as a staff, The E-Myth, and the full phrase was actually work on it, not just in it. And the whole idea in The E-Myth was somebody who had a franchise who worked in this bakery and worked in it, and never took any time to work on it. And so the point of the book was at some point in any organization, you have to stop doing the work of the organization in order to stand back and sit back and look at the organization and carve out time to work on it, not just in it. So we just shortened the phrase to work on it, which basically is a call to action to say every once in a while, you got to sharpen the saw. You have to stop being in it and work on it. And this is very, very difficult to do, especially because Sunday, you know, comes every 7 days. And so does Wednesday night. So does Tuesday night. So does, you know, any weekly event. And so consequently, as church leaders, there's a temptation to ignore this principle, and yet it's vital for the success and health of the organization.
And the truth is, if you only work just in it, and you do the business of ministry, and you meet the deadlines and the schedules, then over time, you miss important things that need to change and need to morph. And I know that one of the stories we've shared several times has to do with a guy that we all know that used to paint in a large church we worked at, and it was so large that by the end of the year, he'd start all over again. But he was always painting, basically. And we showed up in this one room, and he was in the middle of this room with the paint on the walls, and it just smelled and reeked of paint. And I remember, Lane, you said to him, Tenny, can't you smell that? And he said, smell what?
Yeah.
That's the problem. We're in it so much that there are things that we don't see, we don't smell, we don't recognize need to change because we're not stepping back and looking at it.
And the people who sit in our programs or in our environments, they see it. And they are oftentimes quick to bring it to our attention, and oftentimes we're very impatient with their responses to what we're doing. And instead of, you know, taking their suggestions, it's easy to just kind of brush it off and keep going. But as leaders, we should be the first to notice things that need to change. But the only way to do that is to stop and to evaluate and to work on it, not just in it.
And the way this shows up is every one of our departments who are responsible for creating environments or doing the ministry they do, I think every one of them have a weekly scheduled time that is blocked just for evaluation, to rethink and to look at what happened and to make sure that before we move ahead, we've made the adjustments that we need to make. If that's not built into your schedule, you will never do it because the urgent things of ministry will always crowd that time out.
And working on it is never, ever urgent. And by the time it becomes urgent, it's usually too late.
Right.
You know, too much time has gone by. Along with those weekly evaluation meetings, another thing that we've done is oftentimes take a staff member who usually works in an environment, give them a weekend or a Sunday off, and ask them to be an attender in an environment they usually work in or serve in. In other words, get in your car, drive in with the crowd, walk through the halls, just sit in on or just be a participant in an environment. And again, that's just another way of working on it, not in it.
And the principle there that is so huge is to make sure that you have people in your meetings that are looking at things with fresh eyes. That's another reason that new employees are so important. And so many times we'll take somebody that's new before, you know, we've debriefed them and sent them through all kinds of, you know, brainwashing, we might say, and let them sit in our meetings and begin to ask hard questions because they will see things from a different perspective.
Right. Well, Andy, one of the phrases that we used early on quite a bit was act like then as now. I remember that even when we were just starting out, you'd challenge us to make all of our decisions as if we were a much bigger organization.
Yeah, I think actually Reggie came up with that phrase. And again, it was a way to encapsulate this whole notion of thinking ahead, planning as if we're a large church. In fact, one of the first exercises we did when we began the church was we developed an organizational chart as if we had, I forget, like 3,000 or 4,000 people attending. And, right, of course, we were nowhere near that. And we asked the question, what would the staff look like in a large church? And we developed a large organizational chart based on our experience coming from a large church. And then each of the six of us put our initials in every single box on that org chart. I mean, from printing to graphics to music, to, you know, every single thing, we had our initials in there. And again, it was thinking ahead. But that exercise took place in an environment where we had decided to stop doing ministry work on it and not in it. And that was an extremely helpful exercise. But that wasn't going to happen on a Sunday or in the office on a Monday. That was, again, stepping back and asking the question, okay, well, how do we need to anticipate the future? What do we need to do to plan for the future? And that's just part of working on it as opposed to in it.
And even as large as we've become over these past few years, this principle is still true and still very, very important for our organization. As we think about multi-campus strategy, for example, we always sit in our room before we make a ministry decision and ask ourselves the question, okay, how will this look when we have seven campuses or eight campuses or nine campuses? Because if this won't translate to all of those, then maybe we shouldn't do it. And we're forced continually to think, you know, about then so that we can make sure the decisions we're making now work.
The other advantage of act like then is now is if that vocabulary or something similar to that is not in the culture of an organization, then all you do is act like now is now. And you make decisions based just on the, not even the near future. You make decisions based on the present. And consequently, there's no opportunity to plan or whether it's developing facilities or leadership or anything else for the future. You know, every church and every church leader hopes to grow. We hope there are more people. We hope there are more children. We hope there are more high school students. But what we say to church leaders is, okay, why don't you set aside a half a day and plan as if that was actually going to happen? What would you need? What would it look like? And it's not just a matter of vision casting. It's really, I think, a spiritual stewardship to say, God, we're going to be ready for whatever you bring our way, and we don't know what you're going to do. But we're going to be ready. And again, those processes and those conversations don't happen in the day-to-day, week-to-week in it. That's carving out time to work on it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any area where that has paid bigger dividends for us than in the hiring process and in making a lot of those decisions that that org chart really drove. Because I know churches that I talk to, you know, different organizations that I interact with, some of the biggest mistakes they make are hiring to meet the current need
Yep.
instead of hiring for a future need.
And whenever you bring that up, churches say, well, that's always a financial consideration. And that's true. Obviously, anytime you're hiring something, and we have the same issue as we think about when do you hire for a future campus. But what we've learned is instead of allowing finances to stop the conversation, you go ahead, have the conversation, develop the job description, and you start a search for that person, even if you're not ready to commit the dollars. And what happens so oftentimes is when the time comes, you find the person, the dollars are there. But if you wait until you have the money to start the search, you're already behind. And so act like then is now is saying we assume growth, we assume progress. We need to begin now looking for the right person and trust God that the dollars will be there in time.
I think that everyone who's been in ministry for any length of time, or really any business for that matter, has been blindsided by unforeseen problems. How does the practice of working on it alleviate that problem?
Well, if there's not time set aside to work on it and all you do is work in it, then essentially your time is consumed with implementing. Implementing a plan that you don't even remember when the plan was established. Maybe it's the right plan, but you know, if you don't set aside time to work on it, then everything's given to implementing. Sometimes a group or an organization will back up one step from that and say, well, we're going to have planning meetings. We're not just going to implement, we're going to plan. And planning is part of working on it. But what we're talking about is taking a step even further back and say, no, let's imagine. Let's get completely out of the realm of urgency, even beyond the realm of planning what we're going to implement. But let's, you know, where do we imagine? Where do we dream? Where do we do what if, what could be, what should be? And again, that just doesn't happen in the daily grind. So it's not implementing, you know, that's the day-to-day. It's not simply planning, although that's a step. It's even being further removed from the action than that. And again, that is never, ever, ever urgent until there's a crisis. And then as you said, then you're trying to catch up with instead of move ahead. One of the ways we apply work on it is that my assistant will just way out in front plan offsites for our leadership team. And we'll say, we want to have six this year. And if you were to ask me at the beginning of the year, what are you going to talk about? I have no idea. But because everybody's busy and calendars are so complicated, she'll go way out ahead and plan a day at a hotel or a day in a room somewhere. And what is interesting is how many times as we have approached that day, there will be a crisis. There will be something we need to give a major amount of discussion time to. And fortunately, we already have the time set aside. The temptation is to establish a meeting schedule based on current need. But in order to work on it, not in it, you go ahead and plan those times for discussion way ahead. And just the way life works, there's going to be plenty to talk about. But if I had to pull together our leadership team or management team, you know, in 2 or 3 days for a day-long meeting to discuss something, it just won't happen.
And the truth is this, when it comes to meetings, there are a lot of people who even sit and listen to this and think, but I really don't want to be involved in more meetings, off-sites, spending time every week talking about these things. Sometimes it feels like a waste of time. Part of the reason it feels like a waste of time is because some meetings are. And somewhere in the context of thinking about this issue of working on it, you need to dig really hard at how you're doing meetings, what you're doing when you actually get together with your team to make sure that as a result of that time together, there is true evaluation and that there is change. You know, we've read a lot of books that talk about confronting the facts. We've read a lot of issues where there are things that people can't see sometimes because they won't see them. And somewhere in this process, you've got to be willing to have difficult conversations, to turn over some rocks, to look at things, to listen to what other people are saying so that you can actually see what isn't working before change can be implemented and made. I know that for us recently, even a week or two ago with our directors, we sat around and we were talking about characteristics or values that we feel like are in our culture that we want to see exported. And one of the first things, and this was interesting, one of the first things that the directors said that we put on the board was, we feel like that for this organization to continue to grow and for these multi-campuses to happen, we need to continue to have a culture where there is emotional debate that doesn't cost anyone relationally.
Wow.
That we can still have these opportunities where we basically argue, we disagree, but because we're on the same page and because the values of the organization and the stakes are so high because of our calling and our mission, that we can literally push at issues in a room until we walk away in agreement.
And that doesn't happen in the daily schedule. You've got to set aside time for those discussions. And I just want to say again, you got to schedule that time way ahead. And by the time you get there, there's plenty to talk about. And I just don't know of many – I don't know of any pastors of large churches that do that. And I'm sure they do. I don't think we're the only ones. But when I talk to pastors about their meeting schedule – they wait until there's something to talk about to plan a time to talk about it. And I just don't know how you stay ahead of the game that way.
And on the other side of that equation, when I talk to the staffs who are wanting to figure out how to align and keep everything moving, they're begging for opportunities on a regular, consistent basis to get everyone on the same page and for the senior pastor to be engaged with them and where they're going.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we found, at least I feel like, is that those things not only don't happen in the day-to-day meeting, they also rarely happen sitting in your office, that there's something about scheduling an offsite somewhere to sort of get away, get aside. It's almost that youth camp thing that the transparency, the openness, the unfiltered debate, that those things that can happen when you've sort of pulled away and gone away, that it just really makes it that important.
Well, it's a mindset and it's a focus. You show up at the meeting with everything else put on the shelf and you're ready to think and to talk about an issue.
We've done this from the very beginning. Our leadership team has spent a week at the beach together with our wives and husbands since the very first year we started the church. And I remember that first discussion with some of our leaders saying, look, I want to take the team away. It's going to cost a lot of money. We're going to go to the beach. And we just need to do this. And for most of the guys there on our steering committee, that wasn't a big deal. But a few of them kind of looked at me like, you know, is that really necessary? I mean, can't you just get a hotel room somewhere? And I said, no, we have some big, big issues. And these aren't two-hour discussions. These are multi-day discussions. And that's been part of our culture from the beginning. And that has been replicated in some form or fashion through every division, every department. There's a relational benefit to that. It is expensive. And there's no way to quantify the amount of money spent to say, here's the exact, you know, value per dollar. But I would be quick to say, I just think it's an important part of our culture. And I don't know how we would stay ahead or even stay up with change if there weren't these times, these scheduled times to work on it, because it's tempting just to stay in it.
And isn't it true? I mean, think about this. We've all been in this for a while together, and we look at those offsites, we look at the time at the beach. I look at all those times, and I can think of almost a strategic very big decision breakthrough that happened in almost every one of those events. It had to do with getting away, not being in it, being off, thinking about it in a different light, digesting it and processing it and come to a better decision.
And sometimes having some difficult meetings and then taking a walk on the beach and kind of getting our heads back where they need to be. And again, we've made some very strategic decisions, and not just at the management team level. But I just think this is a value we want to push through our whole culture, and it's the only way to get better.
You know, Andy, as Reggie said, we always want to encourage emotional debate, open and honest, unfiltered debate. But you know, when you promote that kind of culture, it's easy to get your feelings hurt every now and then.
It is. In fact, you know, anytime you put leaders in a room, their opinions are generally not held casually. There are very few emotionally neutral issues, especially between leaders as it pertains to our jobs, our careers, our future, ministry, whatever it is. And so the relational part of this and the trust part of this is huge. And again, if there aren't opportunities to build trust, which is basically relational change in our pocket toward each other, then it's going to make unfiltered debate a very difficult thing. And yet, as Reggie said earlier, it's just a big part of progress. It's being willing to say what needs to be said and know that at the end of the day or at the end of the meeting, you know, whatever happened relationally, we're going to be able to patch up, or we had so much momentum going into the meeting, you know, we're going to survive. And we had an advantage there because we knew each other when we began the organization. But since those early days, we've brought hundreds of people onto the staff who didn't know each other, who didn't know us, who we didn't know. But hopefully there is a there's a communication channel that allows people at every level of the organization to know they're being heard. And even though we don't take everybody's suggestion and advice, we take everybody's suggestion and advice seriously and consider it. So again, how an organization implements that or develops that, you know, that's as different as there are people. But the value of unfiltered debate is huge. And again, that doesn't generally happen in the day-to-day. Right. That's setting aside time to work on it, not just in it.
But, Reggie, working on it really isn't just about meetings, though, is it?
No, as a matter of fact, you could demoralize your whole staff if all you're doing is critiquing and trying to change and talking about what's not working right. You know, it also has built into it, and this is such an important part of our culture, the opportunity to celebrate what God has done, to celebrate the wins, so that everyone knows, you know, this thing's moving in a great direction and we're seeing life change. And for us, one of the ways we do that is we have these Monday morning staff meetings every Monday. And again, it's carved out in the schedule. It's work on it opportunity. We're not working in it. And it seems many, many times like, you know, there's work waiting on the desk. It's Monday. I mean, it's Monday after Sunday. Okay, we got stuff waiting on us. But we walk into this room with the entire staff, and all we do is everyone tells stories that remind them of the fact that God is doing something, and to remind each other in the room of how their ministry is successful and the difference that it's making. It's interesting. I had an intern that worked with us all summer, you know, leave a while back, and I asked him, I said, what was your favorite part of your internship? And I was expecting working with family ministry or getting to be mentored by incredible people like you, or, you know, all these kind of things. But I remember this intern saying, you know, my favorite thing was Monday mornings.
Wow.
There was something about sitting in that room and the contagious effect that happened when everybody in there realizes God really is up to something and we're a part of something that's bigger than ourselves.
And we're interdependent and we need each other. And it's not a working in it. It's not a program. It's simply a pause at the beginning of the week to talk about what's happened, what's happening, and how grateful we are for each other. Again, so it's not a retreat. It's not even a planning meeting. It has nothing to do with preparation. It's simply stepping even further back from that and saying, you know, what's going on and what made you feel like you were a success this week?
And people in charge have to be intentional about collecting stories, because this really does show up in the context of the stories of the lives that we're trying to change. There are emails that are read. There are, you know, relationships that happen across the staff that they can tell a story about.
Videos are shown.
We show the baptism stories like we show in our service. We even do that in our service to remind our people, this is what we do and this is why we've created this church. And I think those visuals and those stories capture the imagination, capture the heart, and keep us moving. I can't think of the times we've walked away from those events thinking, oh, we can go another month now, we can go another 2 months now, because it's just energy and fuel to what we do.
But for certain personality types, that is considered a complete waste of time. there is nothing measurable. There's nothing – no progress has been made in terms of actual implementation of ministry. And yet it is a it's a huge part of pausing to work on it as opposed to work in it. And again, you can't measure the value of those things. But having done it almost 10 years, I'm convinced it's just a big part of why we're where we are.
It's just important that this happens at every level so it infuses its way into the entire culture of your staff.
Well, no one in our church celebrates stories and celebrates life change in a bigger or better way than family ministry. Reggie, talk a little bit about what you guys do every year.
Well, because I think we have a lot of people that are production-oriented and A-driven kind of people, we tend to do the program to create the environment and then go to the next one. And it's so easy for us to neglect celebrating, again, you know, what God has done in the actual event that we spend our time on. So we decided that we needed, again, to calendar specific times when we could celebrate it in a really big way so that everybody in the organization could understand, you know, why we're doing what we're doing and, again, remember, you know, the vision of what we're after. So, you know, one of the things that we did a few years ago is we just decided to have a big Academy Awards night. We call it Strategic Service Awards for all of our volunteers. We have a few thousand that show up. We roll out the red carpet. We give out these, you know, Academy Oscar Award kinds of prizes when everybody walks up on the stage. And it's this powerful moment where we recognize, you know, a volunteer who worked as a small group and with children and another one who worked with teenagers. And it is just this emotional evening. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of excitement. But everyone who gets an award represents everyone else on their team. We have them all stand if they work in an environment. And it is just an electric night because we want to make sure that we set aside time to celebrate, you know, again, the stories of what God is doing.
And one of the great things about that night is that none of the volunteers do anything. The staff comes and essentially serves the volunteers on that night so the volunteers who, you know, are in the trenches Sunday after Sunday can just enjoy the evening. And it's done incredibly well, very entertaining. And again, it's very emotional when you hear the little short stories of what this volunteer has done, what's happened in their small group, what happened in the halls as they've hosted, as they've toured, as whatever it was they've done. And to see them come up on stage, receive their award, it's just incredible. And again, no progress is made. This isn't about planning. This isn't about moving forward. It's about a pause. And it is just another way to work on it as opposed to in it.
Okay, guys, we've talked a lot about the importance of working on it. But practically speaking, let's just go over again, what are the basic elements of working on it?
Well, it really involves, you know, taking your calendar and blocking out segments or sections so that you're doing this. You have to have evaluation meetings. We think for our world, because what we do every week is so important, we need to do that weekly. And we don't want to move ahead till we've looked at what we've done and made sure that we're going down the right road.
In addition to meetings that happen here on a weekly basis, every division or department has planned some offsites. In other words, they've budgeted for these. They've found a place. They've developed some sort of programming, again, that's honoring, that keeps things interesting, but gets people off this campus for at least a night, sometimes two nights, again, to just think about the future and work on it.
And one of the things that we did several years ago as a leadership team is we started reading books together. And I think if you look around our offices, you will see staff members who get magazines that represent their target group because they're trying to find out, you know, what Nickelodeon has to say about children or what Fast Company has to say about organization. Because we need to continue to be good stewards of all the intellect and the resources that we have so that collectively we can keep this thing moving in a good direction to impact our culture. And we can't do that if we become stagnant, especially in the area of learning. So we need to create a learning culture.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think one of the things that drives this for us is that years ago we made a commitment to being a learning organization. And learning is never, ever urgent. And learning doesn't happen as I'm preparing for Sunday or preparing for Tuesday or preparing for whatever comes out. Learning is not preparation. Learning is set aside time. And I think our commitment to being a learning organization really motivated us to, again, set aside these strategic times to learn together, to listen together, and again, to work on it, not in it. So I think those two things go hand in hand. And we've talked about some of those things earlier.
And then finally, again, pausing in your organization to celebrate, you know, the stories, to be a collector of stories and to do your part to make sure that you have time to recognize what God is doing. That's sort of what they did in the Old Testament. They had the feast days, they had holy days where they would set aside time to remember and reflect about what God had done.
So evaluation meetings, strategic offsites, being a learning organization, and then celebrating those stories. So, Andy, it's not rocket science. I mean, it makes so much sense. What is the biggest impediment that you see as you look around churches to this process?
I think there's three things. The pastor's availability, because if the guy at the top, the man or the woman at the top, doesn't model this, then everybody feels that everything's urgent, everything's got to happen now, and that, you know, thinking time is wasted time. I think there's that, and we can come back and talk about that more. I think the other impediment for a lot of people is money. They just don't see this as money well spent, and that begins sometimes with elders who don't see the value in it, or finance committee who doesn't see the value in it because they don't do that in their company or their business. They think, why in the world would we take money we've given to the church and pay for the staff to have basically a vacation, as they might see it? And then just busyness. I mean, there is no time for this. And again, there are going to be certain personalities that always consider this a waste of time. They just don't get it. So, you know, between availability of the people who are driving it, the money, and just busyness, again, it's very, very difficult to build this into a culture, but I just think it's critical.
You're so right, Andy, and I think as we work with staffs and churches of every size, you know, the one issue that we keep coming back to, because when we get in honest discussions with them, is staffs feel disconnected. They feel like they're not on the same page. And if most staff members could wave a magic wand and say, I would change, if I could only change one thing, here's the thing I would change. The thing that they would change would be the culture of their organization that doesn't allow the process together to work on this, to get everyone on the same page. Time with their senior pastor. I hear so many staffs talk about this issue that they don't know how to get their senior pastor on the page with them to understand and to cast vision together to move ahead.
And I hear the same thing, Reggie, and I don't understand it. And, you know, maybe one day, you know, you'll be trying to find me as well. But, you know, currently, I just don't know how a church keeps the train on the rails if there's not constant weekly interaction with key staff members. And I understand the busyness, and I understand that, you know, Sunday's urgent, and everybody's pulling at us from different directions. But one of the things that practically I've done that has helped me is my assistant knows that this is a priority, and she controls my calendar. And years ago, we sat down and said, okay, who are the people that have to be on the calendar? And she just gets them on there. So she doesn't set up meetings with staff members when there's something to talk about. Again, she sets up meetings with staff members way ahead so that when there's something to talk about, she says, well, you know, you're going to see them in 2 days. You're going to see them 3 days. You have a meeting with Reggie already scheduled next week. It's already calendared before there's a crisis, before there's something to talk about. If you wait until there's an issue, life just doesn't give us the margin that we need. So she has calendared those people. And then when I add things to the calendar, they're there first. And I really think it keeps staff a priority, because I think in every pastor's heart, that's a priority. But there's a big difference between what's a priority in your heart and what's a priority on your calendar. And your calendar is what people feel. They don't feel what's in your heart.
So basically what we're saying is that there's not anyone listening to this who isn't going to work in their ministry, because we want to be successful. And so we think that success is doing what we do as effective as possible. And we tend not to think that success is stepping back and working on it. But the truly successful people will be those who step back and work on it, not just in it.
You know, it's interesting. All seven of these ministry practices that we've talked about throughout this series actually surfaced in our work on it, not in it time. I mean, the fact mm-hmm. that we're able to That's even right. have this discussion mm-hmm. Through this whole series is really because early on we made that commitment. So every single one of these ministry practices were phrases that we crafted in our work on it, not in it time, and have enabled us to create a culture around these seven things that people that are new to the organization can latch onto pretty quickly, because we've made them easy to latch onto. But that didn't happen on Saturday night, and that didn't happen in the busyness of a Monday afternoon. That happened on our retreats and our times away and our times down at the Marriott locked away in a conference room. So again, just the fact that we're having this discussion just reminds me and reiterates for me the importance of this incredible principle. Work on it, not just in it.
Andy and Reggie, thanks once again for joining me today, and I want to thank those of you listening as well. If you'd like more information on the seven practices of effective ministry, they're all detailed in a book from Multnomah Press available at this website. For other resources from North Point Ministries, please go to northpoint.org.